called Be, and tonight is Be Merciful. And just before I introduce our speaker, if you've been tracking with us in Matthew 5, there's 8 Beatitudes, and I've been saying the first 4 have to do primarily with our relationship with God, and the second 4 have to do with how we are to be in our relationship with others. And last week we talked about, do you remember? Being hungry and thirsty. You just remember hungry, right? Just talked about being hungry. Hungry and thirsty for righteousness. Yeah, and we talked about righteousness in the Bible being more than just right living or right standing with God, i.e. our, like our morality, our personal morality, but having to do with wanting to see God's will permeate our world, things set straight or set right, and that pursuing or hungering and thirsting for righteousness is this inner desperation to see an outer change, not just in us, but with our world, and righteousness having to do with justice. And so it's not a surprise now as we move into the relationship we're supposed to have with others in the kingdom of God, that the very first one is blessed are the merciful. And I'm not going to steal any more of his thunder. Tonight we have Mark Wallace with us here, and he's the director of CH Global. I think that's right, right? Yeah. Sounds impressive. It is. And many of you probably heard of Christian Horizons. Well, CH Global is the international wing of this organization, and they serve the people of the world that have exceptional needs, which isn't just people with what we would deem physical or mental disabilities, but any kind of a thing that hinders all that God has created them to be. And so last year I had a chance to go with Janet Nolan, the CEO of Christian Horizons, and Michael Alamu, another high-up guy in the organization, and Pastor Tim here to Ethiopia and South Sudan, and see what CH is doing with the local churches over there and the national churches over there and with the governments to bring the gospel of Christ in word and in deed to these nations. And South Sudan is the newest country in the world. And you can imagine being only, what, 2 years old now? 2 years old, they got a lot of growing up to do. And there's tons of potential as well. And so without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Mark. He's been a pastor, and he sent me his notes on this. And so with full confidence, I'm going to turn it over. We're going to open the Word tonight. This is not some infomercial for Christian Horizons. It's much more than that. We're going to study what it means to be merciful. And what this does, though, with South Sudan and Christian Horizons is it gives us a tangible way, and I'll talk more about that at the end, of how we can actually live this out and an opportunity that we have as a church and as a youth group. Okay? So please welcome Mr. Mark Wallace and his ginormous pulpit.
they don't roll this out for you, eh? This
no,
is just
I
for me. Well, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me. Thanks for, I hear you were threatened that you were too old to go out trick-or-treating tonight, so thanks for being here. Whether you're shamed into being here or not, I appreciate you being here. So I do work for Christian Horizons, so there's a couple of tensions that I have here being a guest speaker, because it's not an infomercial, right? But I want to do justice to the ministry, not just our ministry, because we don't work alone. We work with partners, and your church has become one of our partners in South Sudan. So I want to represent that ministry well, as well as I want to give you a challenge that's going to touch your heart, and hopefully the Holy Spirit will use no matter where you're called. Because you may not be called to participate directly in what we're speaking of as the examples, but we are all called to be merciful. So for those of you who don't know Christian Horizons, does any of you work for Christian Horizons? Yeah, there's got to be a couple. The rest of you should. It's a great student job. There, that's the infomercial part for Christian Horizons here. We want to serve people based on Christian principles, and what better way than to have good church people coming and working for us and being relief, and it's a wonderful job. So I worked for many years as a pastor to the staff of Christian Horizons here in the province, and then just about a year and a half ago, I started to transition into being involved in our global ministry. So For many years, I actually was a young adults pastor. I didn't work for a church. I worked for an organization. I did different campus ministries. And I always, that was a small group thing, so I kind of go back to those roots. So before we go any further, if you could just turn to the person beside you and tell them the best gift you've ever received. Go ahead. Turn to the person beside you. What's the best gift you've ever received?
Can we give you the other mic?
Yes.
So, anybody want to say? Anybody want to volunteer what their best gift was? Yes? A record player. Excellent. Good. See, it's that easy. You just have to say it. Yeah. An air hockey table. Good. Guitar. Good. Your husband. Oh, see? So, good wife. Okay, good wife. None of you said Jesus, so bad Christians. None of you said life, so bad children of your moms. I'll tell all your moms, none of you are appreciative of that. Right, we received gifts. And gifts kind of relate to mercy, so... Blessed are the merciful, for they shall be shown mercy. So here are the Beatitudes that you've already been through. I won't talk about them in depth, but as has been noticed, there's this sense of what starts with our who we are and how we view ourselves before God, and then it transitions into how we act towards other people, right? And we're in our Western thought, those two things are separated a lot. In the Eastern thought, where, you know, in Israel, when Jesus was teaching these, they weren't as separate. Like, to them, you couldn't be thinking right if you weren't acting right. So it's true that these kind of have an inward and then outward, but you can't have one without the other in the audience that this was written to. You know, you couldn't, there was not a different word for orthodoxy and orthopraxy, which is right thinking and right doing. Right? If you were right thinking, it would be shown through your right doing. And if you were doing right, odds are you were right thinking. Now, we all know that we have this inner life that is kind of at war with that. But that idea of the message going from, are we right before God? Do we understand who we are? Are we poor in spirit? Do we mourn for our sin and our world? Are we meek, humble? Are we, you know, how is our spirit in that way? Do we hunger and thirst for righteousness and justice and our own right actions as well as the world around us? And then, are we merciful? Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. When we think about mercy, oftentimes we think about forgiveness. Forgiveness is definitely an aspect of mercy. This is a dictionary definition. Compassion, forbearance, it's like when you need a dictionary to look up the words in the definition, it's not that helpful, but shown by one to another, who is in his power and has no claim to kindness, God's forbearance and forgiveness of sins. You know, if a dictionary has God in the definition, it's not a new dictionary, this was from 1989, you know, right? But we have some parables about forgiveness. So here's my other tension. When I'm speaking and I'm, you know, trying to give you a message that's going to challenge you as well as represent my ministry, that's one tension. The other one is, because I was a young adult, college and career, whatever you want to call it, pastor for a long time, you're always looking for this angle, right? Stimulate the mind, come at it in a new way, something they haven't heard before. But almost every story that we're going to look at tonight is like Sunday School 101, like right back to the beginning. My message tonight is really, really simple. But it's also one that I, myself, I'll speak for me, don't live by that often. It's hard. It's a simple message that's really hard to live out.
So that I do feel that, you know, I was like, I hope I have some Greek word or, you know, Hebrew they've never heard of or anything like that.
For the simple people.
For the simple people. Oh, notes. Notes. Good. So right back, when we think about forgiveness and mercy, we have this story. You know, when Peter asks, how many times must I forgive? And Jesus answers, you know, not seven times, but 77. And he tells them this story. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. At this, the servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay back everything. The servant's master took pity on him. He canceled the debt and let him go. But when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. He grabbed him and began to choke him. See this like acted out as a skit in Sunday school. That'd be nice. My son's acted it almost every day. Anyway. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. And his fellow servant fell on his knees and begged him, be patient with me and I will pay it back. But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay his debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged. And they went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said. I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy, mercy, keyword for tonight, ding, on your fellow servants, just as I had on you? In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he could pay back all he owed. Here's the scary part. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brothers and sisters from your heart. A lot of the stories that we're going to look at tonight are the simple stories that have a really scary message in them, like that. The really scary message of forgiveness. Our forgiveness, there's a couple times in the Bible where God says, you will forgive as you are forgiven. This is one of them. Obviously, another one is in the Lord's Prayer, you know. After the Lord's Prayer, you know, then he has this little aside that says, because if you forgive, you will be forgiven. Now, that is not salvation by works, right? It's not that you earn your salvation by forgiving people. That's not what I'm saying. But there's this idea that if we are poor in spirit, if we are mourning our sin, if we realize how merciful God has been to us in the area of forgiveness, if we truly recognize that, we will be merciful. There will be a natural outflowing that comes from that. That if we truly understand what forgiveness means in our own lives, then we will be forgiving to others. You know, another way of telling the story would be, you know, you wreck your parents' car. You come home, find out your brother or sister has wrecked something of yours, and you go in to ask your parents for permission while, you know, having your brother or sister in a headlock. It's not a good look, right? It's not a good strategy. Now, that's not the way, you know, with God, we don't need strategies for forgiveness, but do we understand what it means to be forgiven? Sometimes it's hard. Some of us are bearing deep wounds. Forgiveness is not going to be easy. But we got to remember that Jesus also bears deep wounds, and he's forgiving. This is one of those things, you know, when I'm, you know, I can't believe they did that to me, and we get that justice mindset on. We get that, you know, I deserve better, da 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 da, and we go in our prayers like, how dare they do this to me? That's the best time it's good to imagine that you're praying to Jesus who's on the cross, right? How dare they do this to me? Be merciful, and you will receive mercy. We have another example. To some who are confident in their own righteousness, and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week, and I give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and all those who humble themselves will be exalted. This idea of mercy, it's funny. If you ask somebody, you know, I'll ask you the question right now. You don't have to move. You don't have to nod. You don't have to put your hand up. But I'm just going to ask you the question. Are you a good person? Are you a moral person? Are you a moral person? Now, I'll tell you what tends to happen in people's minds when I ask that question. You know, there might be the Sunday school answer of, no, I'm a poor, vile, wretched sinner. But on the other side, you start to think of all the things you don't do that you know other people do, right? You automatically start to think, well, I don't do this and this and this and this, and I'm pretty good, right? We tend to think of what we don't do, and that's exactly what this Pharisee is doing, right? I am not like these people. When the prayer God honors is when we fall on our faces and we say, have mercy, because we all need it. The only way that we can be merciful is if we truly understand the mercy that we have received. To get right down to it and say, this is what I deserve, death, punishment, but this is what I'm getting. That puts us in a good place to be merciful. Now, we're going to talk a little bit more about the second idea of mercy, but before I leave forgiveness, that's the key, right? The key to being forgiving to other people is spending time with God. Constantly being before him, having him illuminate the sin in your own life, feeling that relief of forgiveness, and then being prepared to go out and be forgiving to other people. Now, a few years ago, when I was doing a blog series actually on the Beatitudes, and I came to the mercy one, I started to do a word study on mercy. Like, that's what pastors are supposed to do. They do word studies, right? So I did a word study on the word mercy in the English version. And this is one of the verses that came up, because Psalm 23, 6 in the King James said, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Anybody know what it says in other translations, or has anybody memorize this with another word in there? Is mercy still the kind of key one? I know, I said memorize. Don't Google. Sorry, I didn't mean memorize. We don't memorize things, right? We have phones to remember things for us now. The word in the NIV there is love. Some other translations have covenant love. And the reason is because that's a really hard Hebrew word to translate, because it means a whole bunch of big things. The Hebrew word is chesed, which, you know, a lot of people have as tattoos. I've seen it. You know, that's one of those common Hebrew words that people like. It's on people's bags, you know. Chesed. It means God's covenant love, God's loyal love. So why could it be translated as mercy? And the answer is, because if God is committed to me, if God is committed to being in a relationship with me, he is committing to be merciful to me, because I am committed to screwing up. Right? Isn't that the way it works? When you enter into a committed relationship with anybody, no matter what that committed relationship was like, whether it's housemates, you know, just committing to live together, or a married couple committing to share their lives together, or coworkers committing to coexist equally, if you commit to be in a relationship with anyone, you are committing to forgive them. Because if you're with me for any period of time, I'm going to have to say I'm sorry. And if I'm with you for any period of time, you're going to have to say you're sorry. So why is it so hard? Because it is. And pride gets involved, the poor in spirit goes out the window, and, you know, we start to think, well, here's my justification, or here are my rights, or here, you know, all those kind of things come in. But just bear that in mind. Any relationship you commit to, you're committing to forgive. You know, how long does a marriage last if you say, I vow to love, honor, and cherish you until you make a mistake? No, right? It's a short marriage. It doesn't work. Any relationship we're in is a relationship that will involve forgiveness. So we need to be prepared for that. The other thing is, if you can think back on a committed relationship that you're in, whether it be to your parents, to, you know, housemate, whatever it is, and you can't think of a time you said you're sorry, there's probably a problem there, because you probably should have at some point. This committed relationship, it really brings me back to that, you know, the love passage in Corinthians. Love does not keep a record of wrongs. You know, kind of goes right in there. If you're committing to a relationship with anyone, no matter how superficial the relationship is, it will involve forgiveness. I'm going to leave kind of forgiveness there, but know that that is, you know, when you put yourself as much as we ever can in God's point of view and think about his relationship to us, unforgiveness must be one of the silliest things in our lives. When he looks at what he has done for us and that we have such a hard time doing it for others, like the things that we forgive. I mean, the example of 100 bags of gold to 100 coins doesn't even cover the forgiveness gap between God and me and my closest neighbor, right? It's a huge gap. So that's the first one. But merciful, so here are the three Greek words that are translated into English as merciful, forgive, and give. So you'll notice that forgive is a little bit separate. Mercy often comes with forgiveness, like in that story, that parable we looked at. He talks about forgiving debts, and you should have been merciful. But it's really a story about forgiveness. We talk about mercy in the Bible. It's really related, in the Greek, it's really related to the word to give. And the most common way the word mercy, or the word that's in the Beatitudes, the elimon, is the most common way that is used in the Bible is in this sentence: Lord, have mercy on me. The most common way the word mercy is used in the New Testament is when Jesus walks by, people cry out for help. Right? Help me. Have mercy on me. It's usually people who are afflicted by a disease, or people who have a loved one who's dying. It's people who need a gift from Jesus, a gift that will restore life. We can think about all the things that would go with that: poverty, being an outcast, when we think about certain diseases in the biblical period, that you'd be an outcast if you had them. These people are crying, Lord, have mercy on me. And that's where we're going to spend kind of the bulk of our time here, is thinking about what does that mean for us today? That idea of mercy as in a gift, an unmerited gift. It's not a gift that you have any claim to. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a gift. It's not that they're saying, Jesus, have mercy on me, because they think they've wronged Jesus, because they probably didn't know he was the Son of God and didn't realize they'd wronged him. They're saying, just have mercy on me. I know it's not your fault I'm this way, or it's not something I've done to you that made me this way, but you're in a position to help me. Will you help me? Brings us to another well-trod parable. The parable of the Good Samaritan. So on one occasion, an expert of the law stood to test Jesus. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? What is it written in the law? He replied. How do you read it? And he answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. I think, you know, those words are around here, but spoken by Jesus, because he spoke them in other places. You have answered correctly, Jesus replied. Do this, and you will live. But he, wanting to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? And that's a question I'm going to have you look at when you get into small groups. Who is your neighbor today? Who is my neighbor? And then he tells the story of the Good Samaritan. You know, the guy gets beat up on the side of the road. Nobody helps him. And then finally, the person who helps him is the person you would least expect. A person from another culture, a culture that doesn't like theirs. You know, they are the ones that come in. I'm assuming these are the snack people. Okay, good. Just give it voice since we're all distracted. There you go. I've offended everyone. They've gone to forgive people, I think. No, I think I've moved them to action. I have more self-esteem than that. I'll take it as good. And then Jesus asks the question at the end of the story, which of the three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell to the hands of the robber? And the expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. And Jesus told him, go and do likewise. So in this case, the man who showed mercy was not the man who beat him up, right? The man who showed mercy was not someone who had, the man had no hold on him at all. He could have walked by just like the other people in the story did. But he didn't. He had mercy. He entered that man's situation and did something about this.